Honors. I'm Tammy Woodward here for Lester Hynax. In my opinion, this case has two issues. One, they didn't have reasonable suspicion by their own admission. And two, if their actions were diligent, I'm really not sure what wouldn't be diligent. As the court knows, my client was detained unlawfully for 2 hours. And as Rodriguez said, law enforcement cannot prolong a traffic stop just to conduct a separate drug investigation once the mission of the stop is complete.
I was bothered by the fact here, maybe you can clear it up. When Mr. Panix was asked for his name, he said, "My name is Lester Johnson." And he gave a false, not only false name, but he gave a false social security number. They ran him through whatever database they could, and they couldn't find anybody that responded to his name. It wasn't until 2 hours later, when they took his fingerprints, that they found out he was Lester Panix. Right? If the purpose of the traffic stop was to cite him for traveling 100 miles an hour in a 70-mile zone, and he gave a false name, that took time to run down until they got his true name. How can they get a traffic ticket until they know his name?
That's a really good question, and I thought about that. Interestingly enough, they booked him in jail under Lester Johnson, the false name. His passenger gave correct information, and they didn't get it back for whatever reason.
Hopefully it wasn't valid.
Right, but he did give correct information. It didn't come back. But all he had to do was issue the ticket. They booked him into jail that way. And how long does it take to realize you're not going to get a hit on that same information? They kept going.
They couldn't get a hit until they took his fingerprints in jail. So, to a certain extent, the person who prolonged the investigation was Lester Panix, not also Lester Johnson.
If
they're given a thought on Lester Panix to start with, and given a correct social security number, then you might say that there wasn't any prolongation of the process to give him a ticket. But that's not what he did.
So, in that case, my guess is they were after what was in that car before they even knew he gave a fake name.
Suppose there was a subjective, improper motive. That doesn't make any difference in the false name in the case, does it?
I think it does.
Why? What's your case that says that? Just the opposite. It seems to me that we have cases all over the place, Wren and Wallace, saying the fact that the alleged traffic violation is a pretext for the stop is irrelevant, so long as the objective circumstances justify the stop.
Then he gave a false name. So they had to take him to jail to print him so they could find out his real name.
That's right. But if you can't give a ticket, if you don't have a ticket, the name of Lester Johnson, he would have said, "Well, you can give me notice, my name is Lester Panix."
They wrote the tickets out to Lester Johnson, Your Honor. They simply put, they waited to get that drug dog in. They wanted the drug dog. 25 minutes into it, the tickets, they were writing slowly, buying time, they wrote the tickets out to Lester Johnson.
No question of substantial evidence of the pretext.
No. They pulled him over for speeding. I'll give him that. But right away, they said this stinks to high hell or something like that.
There was another thing that stunk about it, wasn't it? He didn't have any authority to be driving that car from the rental agreement, right?
No, he didn't, Your Honor, but
didn't they know that from the outset? The rental agreement had someone else's name, not he or the passenger.
Correct. He was up front with the officers about that. He said, "I am not on the rental agreement. I don't have a driver's license."
But didn't they have a right to figure out if he was driving a stolen car?
Or they did. They contacted the rental car agency.
People told him, "Tow that car." and don't let him drive it away, right?
Absolutely. They had secured the deal with the rental car prior to that, Your Honor. They called the drug dog before they even found out what was going on with the rental car. I mean, in a rental car, no driver's license. Okay, fine, you're not supposed to be driving that car. What about that says, I have drugs and a gun in my trunk? These officers were afraid they were going to be ambushed. And how many kids does this woman have? And, you know, it's ridiculous. I am offended by their behavior as a citizen. I understand he gave a wrong name. He shouldn't have done that.
The I-94 is a drug highway.
Okay, at this point, and with all due respect, what highway isn't a drug corridor? I mean, Montana is, you have to go through Montana to get from, you know, it's a big state. Drugs are everywhere.
How long was it into the stop that they confirmed that the woman who rented the car had actually given them permission?
I don't know that they ever did confirm that she gave them permission to drive, but...
So you just said a minute ago that in response to Judge Lambert's question, because when I first looked at it, I thought, well, runs the name, this name, Lester Johnson, the Social Security, and I think there was another piece of information that they gave, date of birth. They don't get any confirmation. It's somebody else, the rental cars is somebody else's name. I just, they may not have reasonable suspicion about drugs, but, they might have reasonable suspicion that this is a stolen vehicle.
Sure, well,
and they have a right to investigate that to confirm that it's not stolen.
Right, but drug dogs don't.
But how long did it, well, I know that, how long did it, at what point did they confirm, were they able to confirm, or, dispel any suspicion that this might not have been a stolen car? Where does that come from?
They never looked into whether or not it was stolen. They talked to the rental car agency, and they had agreed to secure the rental car for the agency. And the owner of the rental car was very grateful, and so grateful, in fact, he stopped stuff that he was conspiring with these people to kill drugs and have a gun. They were going to secure the vehicle, and that was done. The tickets were written out to Lester Johnson. They made arrangements with the rental vehicle. At that point, they could have issued the tickets and sent them packing. Didn't take two officers.
How far into the stop?
How far into the stop? Well, about 50 minutes into the stop, everything had been done. Everything. And I'm giving them a couple minutes. It was a long stop.
Do you want to address the sentencing issue?
That's interesting, too. It's beyond me how a gun locked in one suitcase in a trunk is going to facilitate drug dealing of the drugs that are locked in a separate suitcase, also in the trunk. Nowhere near Lester Pinex.
Who's prosecuted for drug dealing? Who's prosecuted for having possession?
Possession, correct. Yes.
Possession for distribution?
No, just possession.
Possession.
Correct. Yeah, it wasn't possession of intent to distribute at the state court level.
It was a possession quantity.
Yes, exactly. And they weren't even extra drugs, they're in two separate suitcases.
You don't think that emboldened his right to possess the drugs or his opportunity?
I don't see how they could. It's to me, hang on a second, let me unlock this. There's no way I gotta unlock this one and get my head. It just makes sense. Thank you.
Police Court, Tim Tarka from the District of Montana for the United States. The vast bulk of this stop was related to the basic mission of a traffic stop, which was complicated by the decisions that Lester Pinex made, causing the delay, as Judge Bea noted. The fact that he gave a false name, false information, prevented the officers from being able to verify his identity and complete the mission of a traffic violation, required them to take him back to the station and book him and bring him before the state court judge before they could resolve the traffic violation. That's confirmed in Excerpts of Record page 64. The discussion between the state judge and Letter Sheriff Fulton regarding the need to bring him before the state court judge.
So what was the case when they run a driver's name through the system that they're going to get back and positive?
It's not always the case.
Mr. Tyler, they were able to keep him and give him correct information.
He gave them at least the correct name. I don't think it's... I couldn't find anything in the record.
They asked for Social Security and for Tyler's Social Security number, and he had a hard time, but he finally gave him a Social Security.
That's true, and I don't know whether or not that was the correct Social Security number or not.
Apparently, it was the correct name.
That's absolutely true. So it's not true that there, as your Honor said, it is not the case that you always get a correct, correct match. But here, the problems with their identity
system. What do they do? I mean, if you give your name, you're stopped for tickets. They did not give your name. And they run into the system, nothing comes up. What happens?
If that was the only the answer, I think that necessarily requires more digging. Okay, so what's your address? Why isn't this coming back correctly? I think what you would have in normal circumstances is a back and forth about that issue and get that resolved, identity question resolved. Here there was many more problems with the identity than just the false name created this problem.
Well, so let's say what I was thinking getting back is when they then engaged in the moving pursuing a separate interview with each one.
Yes.
I've had the class interview Tyler, and I forget the name of the officer.
They had already lived through the room with us.
Yes.
You put me in the name of the room.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And
they'd already driven 1,000 miles.
That's correct.
Or they were 1,000 miles from where the rental agreement was entered in someone else's name. That's how they knew something funny was going on with the rental agreement.
That's absolutely correct. And in addition, they also knew there are a number of factors that this court and other courts have found consistent with the drug trafficking run that were present here. Two individuals without any identification, despite the fact that they're going halfway across the country, the fact that they were in a rental car to which they were more authorized to drive on a four-day trip from... They only had 4 days to get from Seattle to North Dakota and back, which is a known drug trafficking route. Those are factors that are consistent with a drug trafficking trip. And when you set those next to what they found out about why this trip was implausible and their stories were inconsistent, have a strong basis for reasonable suspicion with respect to the stop.
And therefore, they could go forward and conduct separate interviews and do everything that they then did.
Yes. I think the separate interviews were necessary because neither of them were carrying. Again, all of these factors were known. The factor that they were didn't have the identification, that they worked on the rental agreement, the questions about the trip. In addition, since Ms. Pynek said he didn't have any identification, or since he didn't have a license, he had to conduct the further interviews to see whether or not Mr. Tyler was a licensed driver. And so all that time period from 11 to 24 minutes, where they gathered these stories and were able to see what was implausible about them. In addition, with respect to Mr. Tyler, there's also been some basic implausibility about his story. He claimed to be in the Navy, but had no military ID, no leave papers, didn't know who his commanding officer was, didn't know where he was stationed. All of those additional factors about the implausibility of the situation here. So I could
couldn't let the passenger then drive the car because he didn't have a license either.
Yes, both because he didn't have a license and because, as they subsequently learned, neither of them were on the rental agreement. They knew they weren't on the rental agreement, but they confirmed that the car needed to be impounded. So Volk's vast bulk of the stop was related to the basic mission of the stop, establishing the identity and dealing with the violations, and then the other part of the basic mission of the stop is making sure the driver is authorized to be driving that vehicle he's traveling in, and since he wasn't, it was necessary to impound.
How long did it take to find out that the actual lessee of the car had authorized it?
At the 42-minute mark is when the officers learned that when it's not clear that they learned that she had authorized them to drive the car, it is clear that they had talked to her, that the rental car company had talked to her, and that the rental car company wanted the car back. They knew that there was a connection between what the statement by the rental car company was, that Ms. Smith had knew that he had that Tyler Dinex had the car, but didn't know that he was in Montana or that he would be traveling.
Was this a rental agreement which allowed someone other than the renter to drive the car?
It did not. It was not. And I would like to invite the court's attention to, with respect to the diligence issue, to page 74 and 76 of the record, where the district court pointed out that the delay from the time the drug dog and the wrecker were called to the time the stop was completed was not due to a lack of diligence on behalf of the officers. It was due to the isolated location of the stop and the realities of rural Montana. And I would point out that finding and the inferences from that finding are entitled to deference, as the United States Supreme Court said in Cornelius. Local judges making findings of fact and inferences from those related to local circumstances are entitled to due weight. So I think that is important for this court's way in terms of dealing with the diligence. It just took place in Montana. It took time to get the car out there and the dog to run the stop. If the court has no
further. Do you want to address the sentencing issue at all?
Yes, absolutely.
Or do you agree with?
No, I do not.
Well, let me just go right down to it. How does he was the only offense was possession?
Yes.
How does that fit in the trunk of the car in a separate bag?
Well, the reason.
Why not in position under, what is it, 2K2.1B2?
B1.
I don't know, I can't remember.
We agree with which one it is. I would point out that this is reviewed for, it's a factual finding review for clear error here in the district court. Reviewed it, made this finding, and the reason for it is simply, it's not just that they were both in the trunk. We know that Hynex rented this car for the purpose of making this trip. This isn't just a car that he happened to have and stuff in it happened to be there. He rented it for this trip. He packed, or at least knew, there was packed both the gun and the drugs. He mentioned them in the same breath in his discussion in the police car. He says, I've got the dope and the thumper in the trunk. All of those were absolutely.
What's the other offense?
The other the felony possession of drugs.
Possession?
Yes.
So then we're dealing with possession for purposes of distribution?
Yes. Under
we're dealing with possession. So how does the gun enhance or embolden him to possess the gun? I don't quite understand.
Because, Your Honor, as the justice case pointed out, be out in public with a valuable amount of drugs.
What was that? Do you know?
I don't know.
It just seems valuable.
Well,
it was possession for personal use.
I was pointing out that that's what the Court of Justice pointed out, that even a personal use amount of drugs would be valuable enough for that person to require protection or that where protection could embolden them. And again, I would point out that
the gas wasn't accessible to him.
Well, but he was also on a...
It was in his bag, suitcase.
But it was...
And the drugs were in a locked container.
For the purposes of the trip. But this is a case, when you make a decision about what to pack for your car trip, you're thinking about that stuff all together in terms of what you're packing, what you're going to use when you get there. I think the court was well within its discretion to find that those facts supported the idea that this isn't just going out in public in the street, this is going out in public. Going halfway across the country, he chose to pack.
The gun is in the trunk, in the suitcase, and the drugs are in a separate container. It's not even accessible to
him. They were both. His luggage was in the trunk for the purposes of the trip. I agree with that, but I don't think that makes the district court's findings that the idea that you pack a gun and the drugs for this trip, it can't serve the role of emboldening. Unless there's any further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
As far as I know, there is no rural Montana exception to the Fourth Amendment. Let's not forget here, they never once asked if the car was stolen. That didn't cross their mind. 25 minutes into that stop, before they called the rental car agency and found out anything, they asked for a drug dog. And you know what they were told by the resident agent in charge? No, you don't have reasonable suspicion. They knew. They told that agent, we don't know who this guy is. That's the problem. The answer was no, you don't get the dog. They didn't take him to jail to get fingerprints. Again, the tickets were written out to Lester Johnson. They took him to jail so that dog could come and sniff. Period. It's obvious. And I think it is disgusting.
With that last comment, we'll submit the case.